These are recollections of Turner Ashby. Memories of the years when the oceans rose and the several states were separated asunder. Chapter 15.
There's something so dramatic about that dress. That pillbox hat makes you look haunted by another time, maybe another era. Oh, and your hair. I would soar. My heart would soar if my daddy would only let me cut mine that short. Why, thank you, Miss
Claire. Lady Jane Fayette said. She corrected herself.
Milady.
And Claire curtsied. Oh, and it wasn't a bad curtsy, as curtsies go. Although I hadn't seen one since a kindergarten dance class, and that's true.
Oh, please don't go calling me worthless and unspirited titles. We're cousins, Cousin Jane. I can't believe it. I never imagined. I am so delighted. I had no idea we had kin way out there in Missouri. It's as if you have arrived from a fantasy, and why do you need a fantasy? And I do think it's just marvelous that you have got your own little entourage and all.
Lady Astoria of Lexington waved her hand.
An exchequer and an uncle and a captain of the guard? How inventive. Did you know the title exchequer, which is an ancient government department of some sort, was derived from the Normans and the William Conqueror? It was Latin for chessboard. Do you play chess? I'm not partial to it. I prefer the game of Risk. I'm afraid, from my studies, I believe Risk is much more realistic. So much of life is about throwing dice, don't you believe?
I agree completely, m'lady. I interjected. I never passed up a chance for an interjection. It's in my nature. I was just a natural-born interjector. So I said,
I believe, m'lady, that Risk offers a superior tutorial on the tactics of world domination.
Oh, I waxed. I have no idea where the pile of foolishly overblown verbology came from, except that it did come from the heart. I hated chess. Always did, still do. Mainly because I was absolutely, mindlessly, mentally stumbling no good at it. From an early age on, my father would sit down with a huff, plow through my half-baked and ill-considered short-term memory lapse defenses and have taken all my bishops and all my favorite knights. And it doesn't move. He did every time. I never won. And if chess was supposed to be a cold, heartless lesson in life's many and varied and relentless hardships, then I want nothing to do with them. My opinion as a child, it remains the same to this day, and I am 86 years old, is that if you are going to play games, they better have some serious luck involved. Otherwise, most of us, myself very much included, don't have a chance whatsoever. Meanwhile, Lady Astoria had stifled a yawn and continued on. Obviously, she wasn't used to talking to help.
That bodyguard of yours, old Cousin Jane, he's as cute as a button. He reminds me of a gladiator.
Ed stood tall and adjusted his hat and then pulled it off and stroked the feather. Then he leaned in and listened for a couple more compliments.
Oh, now, perhaps a rustic gladiator.
Claire smiled.
A Slavic one, perhaps. Maybe one from the wrong side of the Aegean Sea.
Lady Astoria lowered her voice.
But you do know. You must be careful, my cousin. Oh, my dear cousin, very careful indeed. These servants sometimes, well, they will take their liberties where they have none. He's cute as a button. Oh, he is. But you must not encourage them. Encourage them not to do what?
Now, for some reason. Claire, showing the plumage of what was left from a lost world of quaint middle-class consideration, had not caught on to the gist of the conversation. She certainly knew the what, and what was done with the what, and had done the what with her faithful and true captain of the guard in the back of the wagon a number of times.
Oh, you silly Jane. Become familiar, obviously. Well, we'll have to introduce you to some proper boys, although for the main, I believe men to be most tedious. I try to gather them up in parcels of, a half dozen or so, and send them out on quests, and hope they never come back.
Now, I must remind you all that all this heightened denial of romance was uttered by a 14-year-old girl. Took me aback. Lady Astoria and her utterances would take me aback any number of times in the days to come. We had arrived in the center of the fiefdom of Lexington, Kentucky on the morning of December 15th, 2032. It was about 45 degrees. It was a holiday. The Earl Lexington's wife's birthday, to be exact. Now, almost every other day was a holiday in that world of pretend dukes and duchesses, princesses and earls. Now, I'm not certain which birthday it was for the Counts. She looked to be anywhere between 55 and 85. I'm not making any kind of judgments. You never tell. No matter, it was a grand affair, and somehow, Sterling Bowen got us invited into that party. Well, there was no somehow about it. I know how he did it. This is how he did it. He had us announced. Walked right in, and he said, "Please announce Lady Jane Fayette from the neighboring and troubled realm of Central Missouri and her entourage has arrived." Well, they were announcing everybody and their uncle's uncle that party. So we fit right in. The line was adjacent to a buffet. So the slower the line pushed toward the party, the more we were able to gobble up, which was fine by Ed and me. Sterling Bowen whispered to us, "Now remember, keep your stars straight. If you can't do that, you tell better ones." We remain in the realm of Kentucky for close to 2 years, and our fabrications became so thick, so circular, and at times so poetic, that we often met ourselves in the middle. Now here's an example. I always appreciated this one. This one about Claire. She was asked by a lieutenant of the Lexington elite, and they rode horses with hats. That's both the hats on the horses and on the soldiers themselves. Velvet ones, of course. Lieutenant asked, he said, "If you hail from the west, m'lady, how come you were spy traveling from the east? If we'd come from any other direction, that particular morning, the sun would have been in the horse's eyes now, wouldn't it? Can't have that." And that man, that lieutenant, found her senseless and innocent logic strong and pure because he believed she was his better. She was a princess. She was a lady. Got to believe in something. Belief is a strong, strong medicine. And what to believe changed daily in those days, made for interesting times. Now, even before it became an autonomous country, Kentucky had been one of the first states to vote itself out of democracy, pure, tainted, or otherwise. It voted itself to be a constitutional monarchy with more than a slight leaning towards the kingly part. The state created a House of Lords. Kentucky never had a law before, only state senators and cracker colonels. Everybody knew senators and colonels were worthless and couldn't stand up a real title, so they figured on trying something newer, shinier. Wasn't that an easy thing to do? It took the whole state legislature, both houses, and umpteen speeches to unravel a couple 300 years of common law, torts and precedents, but Kentucky did it. They enacted something called the Peerage Enhancement and Entitlement Act. That act had a number of flowery, wordy preambles. Everybody likes a good preamble. I know I do. And the preambles were printed on real-life parchment. I have no idea where they got that parchment. But Amazon.com, which ran about 17% of the world's economy at the time, and they probably had a couple sheets of parchment somewhere. Maybe they got an overnight delivery, I don't know. But the entire state House of Commons and the House of Lords passed a resolution that their august words and pronouncements henceforth be recorded always on parchment. It was a nice artistic touch, united the Kentucky citizenry in one firm, common belief. They all believed they someday would become kings. Now, Sterling Bowen, he was not a fool. He knew that he was not destined to become a king. He did not have the wherewithal or the desire. He was a man of the service sector. He always felt that if he provided some invaluable items of perfume, mirrors, or fawning compliments, he would become invaluable, which was true. he worked himself right into being one of the Duke of Lexington's most trusted advisors, and I use that word trust advisedly. But what of the other three of us? Well, Claire, she was taken care of. She had papers and lineage, all generated by Sterling Bowen's Peer Age, that's PERAGE.com website, of course. It did not hurt that Lady Jane became fast friends, true friends, with Lady Astoria, and that was not a computer generated, it was real. Claire was summarily moved into the chambers in Lady Astoria's side of castle, and it was of Lady Astoria's intent to have one long, giggling, floating pajama party with her new best friend. And that is what they did. That left me and Ed to look after ourselves. Since we were not of noble birth or of noble purchase, as Ed would smartly say, our futures hinged on us earning our keep with or without our wits and labor, none of which I had used ever before. I had sold lemonade on the street corner one time, if you'd like to consider that labor, but it was more of Lady Fitzgerald's idea than mine. I don't recall what happened to profits, but I know they did not end up in my pockets, that was quite for sure. Ed was better at making a living. He'd done it before, he said. I've been working since I was 10, he said. At what? I asked. Labor, Ed said. What kind of labor? I asked. Kind of labor you don't ever want to go back to, Ed replied. There was plenty of that kind of labor to be had in those days. Of a more medieval, more rustic environment, for the peers of central Kentucky would not be outdone by their neighbors at the quantity or grandeur of their turrets, battlements, and moats, and of course, indentured quarters that they were tacking onto their castles. The Duke of Lexington had commissioned the design of an elaborate 225-foot-high keep equipped with crenellations, machicolations, and a few hoardings to keep up appearances. It was going to take some serious labor to pull all that up. But trusted advisors such as Sterling Bowen strongly advised the taking on of the debt and the expenditure of local resources, citing the most basic of peerage tenets. A duke should never be outdone by an earl. The earl next door put up a 220-foot tower. It's just not right. And then there was a Corporation Tennessee, for the state of Tennessee had, in fact, corporated, making its citizens stockholders in the always money-making venture of government. Tennessee was planning an incursion, or shall we say a hostile takeover of Bowling Green, and either Louisville or Lexington would be next, that was for sure. Ed was saved from the ignoble fate of joining the workforce as a common laborer, or a common foot soldier, by his own Lady Jane's Claire. She would retain him as her personal bodyguard, reciting that his unquestioning devotion and strength had been her saving grace when she had fled the tiny northern Missouri revolt of Fayette in 2031 and sought sanctuary there in Lexington. He would sleep at the foot of her bed, armed, one eye open. Of course, he might have to crawl up under the covers at bed sometimes, as was his lady's will. Oh, they were mated for life, my dear Ed and Claire. They had met on the orphan road, even before they had joined the cult, the name changes. And they would get each other in and out of all kinds of messes. Yes, they were mated for life. And out of familiarity and out of friendship, Lady Jane saved me from a similar ignoble fate of getting my hands dirty with wheelbarrow pushing, brick laying, and or parade marching by recommending me as a tutor for her newfound cousin, Lady Astoria. Apparently, throughout her academic career, Lady Astoria had worn out 2 to 3 dozen tutors I was sent for, and I was eager to be of service. "You're not going to be an idiot, are you?" Lady Astoria asked me. Well, hard to make guarantees. So for the next 2 years, I was set on to a rather idyllic life, giving lessons to a rather idyllic, precocious child. I wasn't that much older than her, but I tried to act. And she acted her age. That was fine. I attempted, to the best of my ability, to provide my charge with a broad and questioning education, just like I received from my own mother, the librarian, and she said, look it up. If you didn't know it, open the book and look it up. And that's what I taught Lady Astoria. But I kept running into a problem. General information regarding the outside world had changed. The tides had changed. Maps had changed. Geography itself had changed. Who knows, mathematics may have changed, but you weren't going to find out through the Kentucky Principality. Seemed like that kind of knowledge was not required in a fiefdom. What they knew well. Horses, fast horses, and attending to them.
I'm from a long line of landed gentry, maybe 500 years back.
Lady Astoria announced one spring afternoon. I figured the number was more like 10 years, but I was unable to quibble. I had no proof. And then one day, I decided to do it, and she agreed. Hold still, I said.
Hold my hand,
she said to Claire.
It won't hurt much,
Claire said. And we fixed her chip. We fixed it with a toothpick and a cell phone memory card. Everybody had a chip. It was hard not to have a chip back then, unless you were a little baby born after the many indentures and political collapses. But that was not the case with Lady Astoria. She was old enough and she had a chip in her head. Probably been placed on her third birthday, which was what they did back then. It was a fairly modern ship, interactive, secure, and to some extent able to access partitions of the cloud. The pre-cloud that was not affected by the cloudburst virus. The chip had a strong signal and we started getting information from around the globe. The country of Rhode Island was no more, washed away and sunk under the most recent hurricanes. The Suckerhauser Empire had taken northern Georgia. The conglomerates of Texas and California had signed an agricultural non-aggression and shared labor pact. Meryl Streep had won her 17th Oscar. There was a first mention of folk heroine named Fair Liza. You keep a note of that. Lady Fitzgerald's mother had died. I wanted to travel east to find Lady, but what if she were out west? I had no idea where she was. Astoria's chip was a good one. We were able to pry into seldom read personal pages on the cloud. We discovered many, many uncomfortable truths.
My father was never a dentist, and my mother was never a lounge singer.
Lady Astoria stomped.
They were born with their titles forever.
Some information is harder to swallow than others. I'd find that all out by myself sooner rather than later. More as comes. Turner Ashby.